are listening to podcast To Šestka from Transparency International, Czech Republic. Today's topic will be lobbying. My name is Lucia and our guest is Nick Ayosa, Deputy Director and Head of Policy and Advocacy in Transparency International, EU. What is lobbying?
Well, when we look at lobbying here in Brussels, we take a look at any direct or indirect activity meant to influence the policymaking happening here in Brussels. And so that includes both direct, so one-to-one meetings, but also indirect lobbying activities such as sponsorship of events or commercial publications. All designed essentially to have policymakers take on board a particular recommendations coming from different entities, whether they're for-profit or not-for-profit.
Lobbyists are perceived quite negatively here in the Czech Republic. How is it in the Brussels?
I think that the perception has been traditionally negative, and I actually contribute to that negativity in many respects being derived at the lack of rules governing lobbying activities. And so correspondingly with the improvement of some of the lobby regulation here in Brussels, I think the perception has equally changed. Again, there's a long way to go, but that negativity is shifting. And I think the negativity is born from the fact that people feel that there are some shadowy forces without transparency influencing, to their detriment, policymaking. And it gives the impression that they don't have a say in the democratic process. But with more transparency, with more accountability and safeguards to ensure that there is not undue influence on the policymaking process, that negativity, I think, at least in Brussels, is slowly changing.
How can you differentiate when the lobbying is being legitimate and useful and when it's being problematic?
Well, there's a number of different ethical standards we would like to see around lobbying activity, such as representing, being forthcoming and transparent on whom you're representing, making sure that the recommendations and evidence you're using for those recommendations are valid. And of course, that you aren't trying to unduly influence through coercion or even threats. Again, there are a number of standards. There's a code of conduct here that all of the registrants of the transparency register at an EU level must adhere to, and these are some of the principles. But these are the normal ethical principles around lobbying that are widely recognized at an international level at the OECD, as well as other frameworks such as the US.
There's practically no existing regulation of lobbying in the Czech Republic. But in a number of states around the world, including some EU institutions or the US,
sure.
There are lobbying
rules.
Well,
first,
can you tell us how the regulation generally works?
A lot of the rules in place for the system here in Brussels are one, piecemeal to a large degree. They're in large part up to the individual institutions to implement within the framework of an agreement that they have between themselves. And two, it's really quite voluntary in nature. But there are incentives or conditions that compel lobbyists here in town to register and then to correspondingly adhere to the code of conduct. So first, there's an interinstitutional agreement that I believe now is a decade old. It's been revised recently in last year, but it began a decade ago, setting up a system between the Commission and the Parliament, where eventually there was also a transparency register for registrants. And then over the years, certain conditions were added. So, for instance, if you wanted to go into the building of the Parliament and meet a policymaker to lobby them, you had to be your organization had to be registered on the. It still is the case, but of course, virtually it's a little different. You had to be on the transparency register. The commission also has internal rules that members of staff should only meet registered lobbyists, for instance. But the onus is on the lobbyist to register. And those conditions are the reasons why there are a large amount of lobbyists that are registered in town. I think at last count, there was almost 13,000 lobby organizations registered. Because one is that you should be registered as a matter of course if you are trying to directly or indirectly influence the policymaking decisions here in Brussels, but whether you're based in Brussels or not is irrelevant. There has been a number of different reforms also on the transparency of lobbying. In 2015, the European Commission decided that they would publish their lobby meetings. If it pertained to certain classifications of officials, so if you were meeting a commissioner, their cabinet members, a director general or director, then that those meetings would be published. Something that we have also included in our online platform Integrity Watch that looks at this kind of publicly available data and allows citizens and journalists to very quickly sort through them and see how the decision-making process is being influenced. And then more recently, through a revision of the rules governing the parliament, certain classifications of MEPs or members of the European Parliament also have to publish their meetings. And these are committee chair positions, rapporteurs or the lead draftsperson of a report, and shadow rapporteurs, which are the people assigned from the different political groups following that particular dossier.
Can I, as a citizen, get information on who is lobbying for what? Who is responsible for passing or stopping legislation in the EU?
Well, stopping legislation in the EU rarely happens. Once the process, because it's a lengthy process, that begins with a large assessment by the executive, the European Commission, on whether to first propose legislation. And so once that proposal's put forward by the Commission and it goes to the co-legislators, the Parliament and the Council, rarely does it get stopped or blocked. It gets delayed. There are instances where regulation just has been shelved, but they're rare. As a citizen, you at an EU level are privy to a number of different pieces of information on this process. One, you can of course find out who is drafting the legislation. You can find out at the European Parliament level, which members are tabling which amendments. At the Commission, there's a number of different pieces of data that you can, from impact assessments to consultations on pre-proposal. The real black box of transparency over the decision-making process actually happens in the Council. And this is something, of course, that we've worked on and tried to reform for many years, unfortunately, unsuccessfully. And this has to do with which member states are taking which position on a particular file at any given time, because those deliberations aren't public. They're not minuted. Well, they are, but they're not. Those minutes aren't publicly made available. So it's almost impossible for citizens to understand how their respective governments are making or negotiating legislation at an EU level, which removes any kind of civic accountability. And the problem, of course, is that this has been very suitable for member states, because with this lack of transparency, with this lack of accountability, oftentimes, they take deviating routes on policy than their public statements. In those deliberations. Sometimes they're even, used as bargaining chips on other dossiers where they might need a large member states for support. And this is something that has been highlighted by us, other civil society actors, journalists, the European Parliament, the European Ombudsman, because it's very easy to say, well, Brussels did that. That's not what we wanted. But Brussels really, as a co-legislator, is composed of, of course, the European Parliament, but the member states, the governments themselves. And this arrangement of having no transparency in the Council and how these member states arrive at decisions and which member state was advocating for this or the other thing has only benefited them.
The Czech Prime Minister likes to say it's Brussels' fault.
Yes, I mean, and of course it behooves him to take that position and not go into a little bit more of a candid, truthful nature and explain to citizens that the Czech Republic is represented in the Council and is, you know, part of the co-legislator of EU legislation. But unfortunately, Prime Minister Babiš is not alone in this scapegoating of Brussels. Now, having said that, sometimes, legislation here is built on compromise and consensus. So, yes, it's possible on some pieces of legislation, the Czech Republic wanted something but didn't get it. But oftentimes, it's a road in the middle. And more often, misled to the public that Brussels, quote unquote, did this, and this is not what we wanted, and you can just place the blame there.
With EU plans to introduce a digital tax, American tech giants are getting creative with lobbying in Brussels, using any opportunity to increase their visibility. According to Transparency International, in 2019 alone, Google spent 8 million euros on lobbying in Brussels. Along with Amazon, Facebook and Apple, lobbying budgets have increased by 510% since 2014.
Who are the biggest lobbies by spending in the EU?
You can find that out. It varies. But what we've done, and you can find that out through our Integrity Watch platform. But what we've noticed is we've looked at sort of trends, and some of the very active dossiers that are attracting a lot of attention in this town. And I think that some of the trends that we've seen has been a huge uptake of spending when it comes to big tech dossiers. Yeah, we did a data analysis in the spring, looking at some of the figures. And I mean, if you take a look at the top 10 lobbyists, yeah, Apple, Google, they're all there. And they've only increased their activities and spending in the last 5 or 6 years substantially, yeah, by hundreds of percentages. Yeah. And that's because they're well aware now that regulation in Brussels doesn't just affect the EU27 anymore. Particularly when it comes to some of the regulatory measures that Brussels feels that they need to take with the online platforms. And there are a number of pieces of legislation right now that are going through, such as the Digital Services Act, Digital Markets Act, that will affect these large big tech companies' bottom line. The combined lobby expenditure declared in 2020 alone by all EU lobbyists was 1.6 billion euros. That includes everybody, yeah. But big tech is in the big spending, yeah. And so that's at least some of the trends that we see most recently as far as the amount of spending going on.
In the US, companies can have in-house lobbyists, but they can also hire like a third party, usually a consulting firm, who lobby for them. Does this work the same in the EU?
Yeah, to a large extent, there's a lot of consultancies. For instance, but of course, the rules in place when it comes to consultancies is such that they do have to declare their clients in the transparency register. So you do know who is they're representing. I mean, but it is quite common, and it's always been very common. I mean, I actually have two hats, I suppose, as far as experience goes. I've worked, of course, for Transparency International EU for 7 years, but prior to that, I worked for 6 years in the European Parliament as a humble parliamentary assistant, and some of the committees that my MEP sat on such as industry and environment, were heavily lobbied. I was lobbied extensively, both including pharmaceutical companies, energy, telecommunications, and they often take a multi-pronged approach to lobbying. You'll get directly lobbied by big pharma company X or big tech company X, but you'll also get the consultancies. You'll get forums. You'll get associations. There's a number of different indirect ways that large companies that have a lot of money to spend on lobbying activities approach policymaking, and that certainly hasn't changed over the years.
We, as Transparency International, are also kind of lobbyists, right? I spoke to Scott from TIUS office, and we talked about how they are lobbying for this election law spec called HR1. What does the TIEU lobby for? Any success stories?
Absolutely. And of course, I mean, you know, we do consider ourselves lobbyists because we don't believe that lobbying, if done ethically, transparently, is an evil activity. You know, an informed policymaking process is always for the better, we believe. And in doing so, we have three tracks of work that we lobby for in Brussels. One is for legislative and administrative changes when it comes to political integrity of the institutions. So more lobby transparency, better ethical frameworks, curbing revolving door cases between the institutions and industry. The second work that we engage in here is to try and stop illicit financial flows of money. And in that respect, we have successfully lobbied for anti-money laundering directives. We have had the Commission act in the field of golden visas, which is essentially pay for residency schemes that oligarchs and unsavory people use to enter the EU and to get their money in the EU. Our third body of work is sort of EU legislation when it comes to anti-fraud and anti-corruption generally. Or a horizontal pillar of work that we do, because it's Brussels and there's a lot of horizontal things. We've successfully lobbied for a rather comprehensive whistleblowing directive that is now being transposed by the member states and should be fully transposed by December of this year. It won't be. It's delayed. COVID. so the member states say. But we've also been successful in improving anti-fraud measures when it comes to the protection of EU financial interests and EU funds. We have, for many years, prior to the creation of the body, lobbied for a European Public Prosecutor's Office. We're now, as of June of this year, that office is now fully operational. And of course, most recently, since 2016, have been lobbying for a rule of law conditionality regulation when it comes to the disbursement of EU funds, where before this disbursement, a certain rule of law criteria must be met. A rather controversial piece of legislation that certain member states like Hungary vehemently opposed, but which was ultimately adopted and entered into force of January this year. So all in all, with the ups, we also have downs. We've struggled with ethical reform when it comes to members of the European Parliament, who are natural allies when we talk about anti-fraud measures when it comes to protecting EU funds, and have serious problems when we want more transparency of how they spend their own publicly available allowances. So again, always a work in progress, slow. As everything isn't here in Brussels, but certainly on a trajectory that is more positive than negative.
Is there a push for lobbying regulation that could be transposed to the member state?
No, there's no discussion. There's no discussion on that, not least because there's some competence problems with the union acting in that field. But on a more practical note, we just concluded one of the more painful processes that lasted 5 years, concluding a revision of the agreement on lobbying in Brussels of the institutions. And one can just conclude that after five painful years, the progress wasn't much. It was a rather disappointing agreement. So I think in many respects, whatever efforts that the institutions have in further legislation should be focused first on themselves. But having recognized that, the lobbying rules in place in Brussels are in many respects more advanced than a lot of member states. So I'm both critical and offer praise. But right now there's certainly no discussions, when it comes to that. I think some of the discussions around tackling, say, undue influence in the policymaking processes in the member states will come with an anticipated proposal later this year on online political advertising. Cause that is a competence of the union under the single market. And so, I think that will be, quite an interesting and something that we'll be engaged in, because of course, and as well as the big tech companies, to no surprise, that is something that Brussels has, and particularly the Commission, taking great interest in tackling when it comes to undue influence in policymaking and where it has competence to act, for the 27th.
We prefer to finish our interviews with something lighter. Do you have any fun incidents or stories from the time you have been lobbied?
Yes. Well, I mean, I have not fun, me, but maybe revealing when I was lobbied is that, again, and it has to do around perhaps countering perceptions of industry lobbyists. You know, some are extremely competent at their jobs and what they do, but so are some civil society organizations. But I was indeed one time lobbied. They shuttled in a very high executive from Paris who was head of the European region for a big pharma company who will remain nameless, brought in accompanied by two consultancies or two people from the same consultancy, Brussels-based. And within, 4 minutes, I did have to very diplomatically and civilly ask them why in the world they were having a meeting with me. Because one is that my member wasn't on the relevant committee. Two, if you had done a quick Google search, you would have realized my member already disagrees with you. And three, I don't know how much these consultants are, but you should be meeting the people that are going to influence that. And so, I mean, it just kind of, there was always this impression that, you know, they're all just, you know, really slick, slick industry lobbyist sharks out there. And that's actually sometimes just not the case. And again, I was in a similar, lobby meeting, with four different telecommunications companies on roaming regulation. So they all had a very, very big vested interest in influencing that process. And they were brought in by a common association that they were all members of. So five representatives with myself and my MEP. And actually it dissolved into an infight between the five because they all had slightly different positions. And so in the end, they didn't really engage with us. They just fought amongst themselves for an hour.
Nick, thank you so much for talking to us. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you very much for having me.
My name is Lucia. Thank you for listening.